You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, it's Thursday. You know what that means. Tomorrow's Friday, Casual Friday. Elisa Profumo is working feverishly on a great show. She says she's going to find more topics for me to rant about than ever before. So you're not going to want to miss tomorrow's show. I'm sure there's going to be lots of good things to say about the wonderful company Monsanto, or as I affectionately like to call them, Monsatan. Anyway, we've got a really important show for you today. If you have yourself, a lot of us are gym rats, and we suffer from joint pain. We've been gone to the doctor and told that we have some form of osteoarthritis. Typically, this is indicative of a thinning of the meniscus inside the joint, and also maybe even a reduction of synovial fluid that leads to bone-on-bone contact, which causes great pain in the smaller appendages like fingers. There could be joint bulging and misshaping. And a lot of times we're told, you know, you got to cut back on the exercise because the exercise is actually promoting the wearing out of the meniscus in the leg or in the knee joint or whatever joint we're talking about. Well, my guest today is from Duke University. He is Dr. Farshad Gilak. How are you doing, Dr. Gilak?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
And your recent research took a look at this concept of does exercise and even more importantly, certain nutritional protocols affect arthritis, correct?
That's right.
What was the name of this study again, please, the paper that you published?
So the name of the paper was Induction of Osteoarthritis and Metabolic Inflammation by a Very High Fat Diet in Mice, Effects of Short-Term Exercise.
Okay.
So we were really interested in what a high-fat diet does to you, and then also on top of it, whether exercise can prevent some of those changes.
Okay. Now, when we say high-fat diet, what percentage of the mice diet, the mouse's diet, which is it, Dr. Gilak? Mice diet or mouse's diet? I hate Mises to pieces. Anyway, what portion of the diet was actually fat in this case?
So in this case, it was 60% fat, which is the real high end,
yeah,
but not that unusual for some people. It's the, you know, if you had almost a pure fast food diet. So like a standard fast food diet is probably about 45% to 50% fat.
And the type of fat that was fed to the rats, was there any differentiation between the pro-inflammatory fats versus the anti-inflammatory fats, or was this just animal fat in general? And if so, from where?
So that is a great question. This was a fairly pro-inflammatory fat. It was basically lard. And lard is one of the worst fats you can have. And this is what we were really interested in, was whether the actual lard itself could have an effect on your health. The next study that we're in the middle of now is actually comparing different fats.
I would love for you to add a fat to that study that you're doing now. I would love for you to add lard from grass-fed cows.
Oh, that would be interesting, yeah.
If you look at grass-fed cows versus corn and grain-fed cows, what you find is a higher degree of omega-3s and a higher degree of conjugated linoleic acid. And as a result of that, those of us who are in the know, who exclusively eat grass-fed beef, hormone-free grass-fed beef, we know that grass-fed beef has the same omega-3 to omega-6 ratio as salmon.
And that, you know, what is really important is those omega-3s are very anti-inflammatory.
Yes.
And what we're trying to look at now in our next study, not to jump the gun with the current study.
No, please.
We are actually comparing omega-3s, omega-6s, and saturated fats.
You know,
is it the weight gain in the fat or the fat itself?
I love your study, and I have to tell you why. While you are searching for the reason for the season as it relates to arthritis, what is going to be elucidated through your work is all fat is not the same. And that is the problem in today's Western diet. We say abandon fat. And that's like saying abandon air or breathing. If you live in a household where people smoke cigarettes, that might be a good thing to think about, but not if you live in the fresh air climates of Colorado. So, you know, it's not all things are not the same. And I love what you're doing. Okay, I will stop. Now and
oh, sure. I just want to say I couldn't agree with you more. That there are some very healthy fats and there are some very unhealthy fats. Cool. And what we've done is our Western diet's taken us from a completely different ratio of healthy to unhealthy fats over the last 100 years. And we're eating very unhealthy now.
Yes. Sounds like you are a paleo nutrition guy to me.
I'm learning about it. I'm actually an engineer by training.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So you fed these mice in their standard chow, a 60% fat diet. What was the control fed?
The control had a standard chow, which is, I think about 10% fat.
Okay.
And so just the normal, what they normally, would eat in their cages.
Okay. And so then what did you look at? Were there just observations made as well as when you sacrificed them, you looked at their joints? Is that what happened?
Yeah, we looked at their joints and at their serum. And the rationale behind the study was, well, you know, we've known for years that obesity is probably one of the worst risk factors for getting arthritis. And in fact, it's probably the number one preventable risk factor. If you look at all the meta-analyses, clinical studies looking at patients. But there are these little nuggets that tell you that it's not the whole story. So, for example, people who are obese actually have more osteoarthritis in their hands, which has nothing to do with body weight and loading, unless they're doing a lot of push-ups, which they probably aren't. But it has nothing to do with that.
Yes, and that's counterintuitive because
it was always
thought that obesity caused arthritis because of the loading. You were carrying
exactly.
this extra person around all day long.
Exactly.
But it's not a mechanical function.
It doesn't, well, it seems to be multiple diseases that have a similar endpoint and potentially it's not really related to the mechanics. The other nugget is that athletes who load their joints much, much more than obese people generally don't get arthritis unless they have an injury and an injury that destabilizes their joint. So just being a recreational runner, even an elite runner, as long as you're not hurting yourself, is not a risk factor for arthritis. Being an athlete really isn't. So those two nuggets led us to try to study, well, what is it about obesity that causes these changes? And I'm giving you a long answer to your question because it's very important to study the body, the organism as a whole, that it's not just one joint that's getting the disease. It's a whole body disease when you're obese. And it's
right.
a metabolic disease. So what we studied was partially the metabolic disease of these animals and how that relates to their joint function and to how much their knees degenerate by becoming obese and then on top of it adding this exercise.
Now,
and so one of our ideas was can we get them to lose weight by having some short-term exercise, which in an interesting way, they didn't lose weight, but what we saw was that it was still protective for them.
Interesting. Now, when you looked at the mice, obviously the knee joint was isolated because of the loading factor, but did you find that the loading factor played any role? Once the environment was set to promote inflammation and thus arthritis, do the loaded joints deteriorate first? And did you notice arthritis in other joints as well in these mice?
Again, another great question. So in these mice, we only focused on the knees, so I can't really answer it in this very high-fat diet. But last year, we published a study with a more reasonable high-fat diet of 45% fat instead of 60% fat. And what we saw was that not only did the knees degenerate, we actually saw some degeneration in non-weight-bearing joints, such as the temporomandibular joint, the jaw, basically, which has nothing to do, again, with body weight, but started to show these early degenerative changes. So, again, another nugget that points towards the idea that it's a systemic disease
right.
and that obesity is causing this inflammatory response. It's sort of a low-grade systemic inflammation coming from inflammation of your fat. And this just slowly leaches out these chemicals we call cytokines. It's just a chemical that is released from one cell that can act somewhere else in the body. And these cytokines can act everywhere in the body, so other joints, other tissues. And this is why obesity is getting linked to so many other diseases, Alzheimer's, cancer, everything, because it's this inflammatory response.
Yeah, the whole entire body is inflamed. In fact, when inflammation is arrested in many obese people, they lose an amazing amount of weight as they rid themselves of edema and the fluid that it holds. And this is seen quite often when inflammation is addressed as one of the action points, so to speak, in a weight loss program. We need to think about inflammation, especially in the extremely obese. And I've said on this show numerous times, we're going to go into a break here. I just want to say this again, that it is estimated by the year 2030, 50% of the American population will be obese. This is a bigger issue than terrorism, than bailing out the banks, than bailing out the car companies, than bailing out anything, than doing any. If half the population in this country is obese, that means that they will be sick and dying, and the other half of the population who is well will be working to pay for their health care. And this is a very, very scary notion to me. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to pick it up with the questioning with Dr. Behshad Gilak. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner. Order today and get copies of both the Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint Forum to ensure your success.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscle's N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
If you're like me, you avoid the insulin spike from eating pasta, but not anymore. Miracle Noodle is the world's first no-calorie, no-carbohydrate noodle. You heard me right. Now you can enjoy pasta dishes and stay on your low-carb diet. They have fettuccine, linguine, rigatoni, and more. Even angel hair pasta is now a no-calorie, no-carb food. And Miracle Noodle tastes great. So go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Miracle Noodle banner ad to learn more about how you can start enjoying pasta again, even when you're dieting. Find your miracle noodle at superhumanradio.com today.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent
you. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones. And Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried. Because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. I've been saying it all along. Diet and exercise, the key to staving off disease and living longer. We're talking today with Dr. Behshad Gilak from Duke University about recent research that they've done looking at both fat intake and exercise and its effect on osteoarthritis. Dr. Gillack, were the rat, the, I keep wanting to say rats, I'm sorry. I'm so used to Wistar rats being in these studies. Mice must be hard to work with. They're so tiny. Were the mice, segregated into male, female? Was gender taken into account in the calculation for this?
So we only used male mice in this one, and it just because we had used them in a previous study and showed that they were very reproducible in terms of their diets and getting arthritis and so on. So rather than try to segregate the role of sex, it was just easier to use one in this one.
Yeah, because I will bet a cup of coffee that female mice would react differently because of the interplay between estradiol and FAF. Fibroblast activation factor has been shown to be a powerful anti-inflammatory stimuli that is triggered by estradiol, and women benefit from that, but men don't. So it'd be interesting to see in comparison if the same results plays out identically with female subjects.
Absolutely, I think you're completely right. It's a very different question, and you know, they have all of the additional hormones and signaling pathways that are involved. And certainly women process fat differently. There are times in the female life, like during pregnancy, that they actually increase the number of fat cells, which males right. usually don't do except at childhood. Like if you overeat at childhood, you actually increase the number of fat cells that you have. So all those coupled together could certainly affect the inflammatory response, and as well as the way those inflammatory mediators affect your cartilage and your joints.
So now, was there any look at some of the other growth factors that have been known to play a role in chondrocyte maintenance and development, like IGF-1 or growth hormone itself?
No, we couldn't actually look at them in this study. And this is one of the disadvantages of working with mice, is that we get so little blood or serum out of them when we want to look at how they're doing over time and see right. how their inflammation is going. We get about something like 50 microliters each time we give them a little blood stick, unlike a larger animal where you can get, you know, a few milliliters and yeah. do a whole panel. We had to just take a tiny amount and sort of guess as to what is going to go up and down. And so I think, you know, the next step in this would be to, certainly it's a type of study that we could take to patients in the next round. And we actually have some studies going on now with diet and exercise in a very large population of patients who have knee arthritis.
Because I would speculate that it's well known that obese individuals have a variety of compromised hormone levels, and growth hormone, because of the interplay with leptin and ghrelin, is compromised in obese people. Because we know that because we've seen research where obese people are given growth hormone at 2 or 3 IUs a day, and the repartitioning occurs pretty rapidly with them in fat loss and lean body mass increases. So I would venture to say that you have a push and pull. You have the push of the pro-inflammatory response and a pull from the lack of stimulation of new chondrocyte development, which is usually seen when there are adequate amounts of growth factors in the body. I have to believe that both of those things are occurring in the obese model.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, you've got these two effects going on, a sort of an anabolic effect and then the catabolic effect from the obesity. And we don't know what chemical it is from the obesity that's causing this. And you mentioned leptin. It very well may be leptin, which is the hormone that controls appetite.
Right.
But in obesity, it's greatly increased. And so it's very likely that leptin can be acting on the chondrocytes themselves, and even more likely on the skeleton, on the bone, and causing it to remodel, as well as other tissues
really?
In the body. Absolutely. And so what another study that we have published a couple of years ago, which was very interesting, was to take mice that genetically don't have leptin. And this is very interesting because they lose their appetite control. So they're eating a normal diet now. It's not a high-fat diet. They're eating a normal diet. They gain 4 times the weight. So a normal mouse weighs about 20 grams. These mice got up to about 80 grams, much, much bigger than any high-fat diet you could give them. They're just like these little bowling balls.
You know, and not to segue too far, but this yet again speaks to the calorie is not a calorie. You know, the first rule of thermodynamics tries to speak to how we process food. And I've said it millions of times that you know, it is more important, the hormonal interplay and the macronutrients that you are consuming will determine whether your body stores it as fat or not. And this is a perfect example of that. Just because leptin levels were altered, the body of the mice, they were more efficient at producing fat probably from every morsel that they ate.
Exactly. And so they become huge. And here's the interesting finding. They don't get arthritis. Even though they weigh twice as much as the mice that we're talking about right now,
wow,
that are on a 60% diet, their joints at 1 year, which is very old for a mouse, it's middle age, you know, later than middle age, they have pristine joints. So perhaps it's the leptin, perhaps it's the lard. And the other possibility, and my postdoc, Tim Griffin, who did most of this work, came up with that saying, is it leptin, loading, or lard?
Oh, I like that.
And that's what we're trying to figure out, yeah, which one of those three it is now.
Well, and now I have to ask you a question about another disease that, while the end point may be similar to this one, we know that it's considered an autoimmune disorder, which is rheumatoid arthritis. When we look at rheumatoid arthritis, we see the same arthritic results, actually more greater to greater degree of acceleration. And these people can be lean or they can be obese. They can be anywhere in between. I wonder, and I have to ask you a question that I've never understood the answer to. Is there a leptin receptor, first of all?
Yes.
Is it exclusively in the brain? Or is it on fat cells or is it throughout the body?
It's throughout the body.
Okay.
And I wonder. And it works. Yeah, it works in the brain for appetite, but it's been found everywhere. And in fact, your fat becomes leptin resistant. And that's what causes the increased leptin from this feedback control.
I wonder if people who suffer from rheumatoid arthritis actually have a malfunctioning leptin receptor or something to that effect, where they may not, it may not stimulate their appetite because it's not working on the brain, but it's working on all the other tissue throughout the body and causing rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh, it certainly could be. There are links. So, as you said exactly, it's not a direct correlation, but there certainly are links between obesity and rheumatoid arthritis, and certain flare-ups could be associated with obesity. So, as you have these increased circulating inflammatory cytokines, and at the same time you've got this autoimmune disease that's acting throughout the body, the thought is that you could get a synergistic effect from having both of these going on at once. And so it's very likely that leptin is involved also in certain patients who are overweight and have rheumatoid arthritis.
So you said there was no profound inflammatory marker that could be pointed at and said, this is the one that is going up in the obese mice.
Right. Of the panel that we looked at, we didn't see any other than leptin, of course, which is always correlated to obesity and you know, wasn't surprising to find it. But in the panel that we looked at, there wasn't a clear marker of obesity or arthritis, with the caveat that we could only measure a small number of what we really would like to measure.
Is leptin known to be pro-inflammatory?
Yes.
Ah,
yes,
I never realized
pro-inflammatory effects, exactly.
I didn't realize that. Okay. So, and ghrelin is the antagonist of leptin, right? I mean, it's...
Right. In a sense, it doesn't really antagonize leptin, but it's sort of the opposite. Whereas leptin is sort of the hunger molecule, ghrelin is sort of the satiatory
molecule.
Signal.
Okay.
And may have opposite effects, although it's only recently being studied, and certainly not in the context of what we've been describing. Has anyone looked at it that I know of?
So basically, then you said, let's get these little fat mice on a weight loss program. We'll let them keep eating what they're eating, but we're going to make them exercise now and see if that, first of all, accelerates the degeneration of the joint, number one. And number two, if they end up losing some weight, if that compensatory effect of weight loss helps their joints, right?
Exactly. And the shocker was, this is probably no surprise to you and to many of us, if you have a horrible diet, even exercise won't let you lose weight.
Right.
That you can't overcome an awful high-fat diet even by exercising. And you see that. You see a lot of childhood obesity now, and even people who are very active, but they're still obese and overweight.
And they're going to continue to be obese and overweight until the food pyramid is abandoned, until the new plate is abandoned and people start eating ancestral diets. People must look back 100 years and say, look, people ate animal protein, animal fat. The animals were different back then. We must go back and start eating the way our ancestors did. The poorest of the poor ate bread all day long. When you look at the most malnutrition-related countries today, these countries that are suffering, we ship them bags and bags of rice and bags of wheat, and these children survive on a single-grain diet day in and day out, and they suffer from all sorts of maladies as a result of nutritional deficiencies and vitamin deficiencies and so on and so forth. Eating a high-grain diet is what is designed to feed the poor masses. If you want to eat a healthy diet, you have to look back at your ancestors and look at the way they ate that, and then apply exercise to it, and you'll see results. That's what we preach on the show constantly, to abandon the current Western diet, because Michelle Obama's got kids out there talking, you know, about obesity and, hey, what can I do? And she wants them to exercise and eat vegetables, but that's not the exclusive answer. It's not. They must abandon all of the starches that they're eating, and the American diet is just mired in starches, and they are pro-inflammatory because of the lectins found. We know about lectins now. Gluten is not the only one. We know about the pro-inflammatory effect of lectins found in wheat and grain and soy and everything else.
And that's absolutely true. If you look at our diet in the in Native American, early American times, the ratios of omega 6 to omega 3s were about 1 to 1. And now they're anywhere from 10 to 20 to 1. And if you look, the only places in the world where you find this now in Asian and Mediterranean classic diets, you still have a 3 to 1 or 1 to 1 omega 6 to omega 3 ratio.
Right.
Whereas everywhere else where we've westernized, we've brought in fast food, we're way out of the park with where we are with the diet. And I completely agree with you. I think exercise and movement is critical, and what Michelle Obama is doing is wonderful. I think bringing awareness to this is so important.
Shining a light on it is important, absolutely.
But we just need to do a very comprehensive approach. It's not just diet. It's not just exercise. It's not just the cost of food. It's not just screen time and TV time, which has a huge effect because it makes children less active, but it's all of them put together, and portion sizes and everything else we've heard about. It's been a perfect storm.
Yes.
In the last 10 years of doing just about everything wrong. And then we're being surprised that we have an obesity epidemic.
Exactly. Exactly. We have to take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about the exercise that the little mice had to do, and what the results were on the etiology of their diseases. We're talking with, Dr. Fishad Gilak from Duke University. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at ironmaglabs.com. Don't wait too long, because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to ironmaglabs.com today.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me, and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it, and you'll be a believer too.
Your shaker bottle is the most important tool in meal planning. The convenience of being able to take a ready-to-drink meal on the road is a necessity. Too often, our shaker bottle backfires on us, making what should be a convenience a disaster. Shaker Pro is the only shaker bottle in the world with a separate chamber to keep your protein powder dry until you're ready to mix it. Shaker Pro's patented design ensures that all of your powders will blend completely. Shaker Pro is BPA-free. Go to 4sportlife.com today. That's the number 4, sportlife.com.
Supplement.com.
When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
I have never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both The Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on The Blueprint Forum to ensure your success.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking today with Dr. Farshad Gilak from Duke University about the effects of diet and exercise on osteoarthritis. Okay, so what did you do to the little mice, Dr. Gilak, to make them exercise? Did you get them a gym membership at Snap Fitness?
That's right. We got them all-you-can-run membership on the running wheel. Well, it turns out, you know, mice are a little bit like humans. They, once you get them exercising, they get addicted to it. They love to do it.
Yeah.
And probably even a bit more. They just love voluntary exercise. So if you put a wheel in their cage and they're nocturnal, so at night they just hop on the wheel and they run a couple of miles every night, which, you know, for a little mouse, is a long way. So they just love to run on their own.
I wonder what they're thinking when they're running. Like when I'm running, I'm thinking about the neighborhood. Oh, look at that. Look at this. I wonder if they're running and go, oh, they just keep counting the little bars as they go by. Bar, bar,
yeah, right.
bar.
So, probably trying to get away from that cat that's chasing them.
Do you ever try playing music for them to see if they pick up the pace or anything like that?
No, we haven't tried that yet.
Yeah,
maybe get them a little iPod.
So they run 3 hours. They run 3 miles a night.
Yeah, they run 2 to 3 miles. And
are they hopping on and off all night, you know, to their business, get something to drink, and then they get back on again?
No, they just seem to get on there and run. Just run for a long time.
Yeah,
although we haven't tracked them all that carefully, but they seem to like to do it all at once.
Yeah.
And so as we were saying before, even that amount of exercise wasn't enough for them to lose any weight. But what it did do was improve their overall health significantly. So these mice are getting pre-diabetic. They're having such a bad diet that their blood sugar is off. They're not recovering their blood sugar after they eat. Their heart is getting fatty, and so that amount of exercise, 4 weeks, which is a long time for a mouse, but not that long overall, was enough to actually increase their heart size and reduce their glucose levels, their resting glucose levels, again without any weight loss.
Wow, that is a real tribute to exercise, isn't it?
It really is, and it tells you not only are your joints a little bit healthier because you're loading them. We didn't measure pain in these mice. Their tests to sort of see how much their knees and their limbs are hurting. But in other tests, we found that their pain significantly increases with arthritis, as you would expect.
Sure.
But when we looked at their knees and how much they degenerated, the running had actually improved their degeneration. So rather than wear out their joints because they were overweight and heavy, their joints got better.
Now, did you look at the inflammatory markers again after exercise?
We did. And this is where we need to do some more work. What we found was that the actual levels of the panel that we looked at, the absolute levels weren't decreased, but what was altered was that in the high-fat diet, all of these inflammatory markers went up as a cluster. They were all correlated. They all seemed to be synergizing and going up together. And in the exercise group, they were no longer correlated to one another. So that's just one clue that we need to go back and really look at carefully, is whether exercise has disrupted this cascade of inflammatory events.
It's understood amongst those of us who go to the gym and train with the objective of gaining strength and hypertrophy, that there are beneficial inflammatory responses. We know this. We know that the inflammatory response should not be taken across the board as a bad thing. In fact, there's some recent research that I blogged about that I'm trying to find right now that shows that some inflammation is necessary and beneficial in the management of type 2 diabetes. We know that certain prostaglandins promote the increase in muscle satellite cell deployment. And we know that muscle can actually increase metabolic function and thus also increase insulin sensitivity. So I think what you're finding here is probably that, like what we've learned about hormones in general, probably can be applied to everything in the body, from P450 enzyme cascades to inflammatory markers. And that is, there is a symphony that the body likes when certain things are at certain levels in relationship to other cofactors, or there is you know, horrific calliope music occurring when they get out of whack. And I bet the same is true of inflammatory markers. I think inflammation should not be seen as evil in this situation.
Oh, absolutely. And inflammation is absolutely necessary in your body as a response to injury and other conditions. Infection, you have to have it. The question is how fast it resolves. And following an injury, you want an inflammatory response. You want to clean up all the dead cells. You want to clean up the tissues. But then you want the inflammatory molecules and the inflammatory cells to go away. The problem with obesity is that your fat cells hypertrophy. They get very large. They get so large that they can't survive anymore, and they just die in your fat. And your body sends in cleanup cells, which are called macrophages, to clean them up. So they go inside your fat. They set up shop. They clean away the fat cell debris, but then they never leave. Uh-huh. And so if you look at the visceral fat, especially the gut fat of obese patients, it's full of these inflammatory cells. And
cytokines. You know what this is akin to, Dr. Gillack? Back in the old days, you would have a Western town that was being terrorized by a group of desperados, and they would hire someone tougher than the desperados to come in and clean up the town, and he would kill them all, but then he would start preying upon them. So you got rid of these four guys, but you have this one guy who's worse than all four of them. Now he's the one that's taking advantage. That's really interesting that's what's happening here. What about observing some of the things that we know occur during exercise, like an upregulation in glutathione, for instance, or an upregulation in cortisol and its effect on suppressing some of the inflammation that could be damaging chondrocytes, for instance?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't really know, and we haven't looked at that. What we're finding is that almost anything that we do in normal exercise, either aerobic or anaerobic, as you were mentioning before, is going to be generally beneficial. That the anaerobic exercise where you build muscle actually helps you in that regard, because you can take on more of a glycemic load. You can take on those sugars and starches and metabolize them very quickly. The aerobic exercise does the same thing. It allows you to use up the glucose and sort of address these toxic issues that are coming up from the fat, and also helps you stabilize your joints. One of the early signs of osteoarthritis is weakness of the muscle, and especially if you have knee osteoarthritis, your quadriceps become weak, and it's either from disuse, from unloading a little bit, not exercising. So I know I'm not answering your question exactly, but
I think
it's all sort of tied together in terms of anything you do to load your muscles and increase those levels of cortisol and glutathione and even some of the what we call pro and anti-inflammatory cytokines like interleukin 6, which can go either way. It can be pro or anti depending on whether it's coming from certain tissues. That's one of the natural responses of muscle to exercise. And, you know, marathon runners have very high levels immediately after running.
Right.
And so, yeah, the analogy you made to a symphony is exactly true. And in obesity, we have a cacophony of bad music going on that's throwing everything out of
everything
whack.
Off. The other thing that I would have a suspicion that I'd love to know more about, especially if you have larger animals or you have human test subjects that you can actually draw a significant amount of blood from and do a variety of panels, is we know that exercise elevates growth factors. We know that extreme exercise, and extreme is subjective. If you're very, very out of shape, you know, walking up a flight of stairs could be extreme. So, but we know that from extreme exercise, the body pulses growth hormone in response to that exercise. And we know that growth hormone plays a profound effect on chondrocyte generation. When you looked at the mice after exercise to determine that exercise was actually beneficial, did you notice a thickening of the meniscus? Did you notice, do mice have synovial fluid in a capsule, and did you see an increase in this as well?
They do. Mice are very similar in their knees. The one difference is that their meniscus, which is this stabilizing tissue in the joint, very important for keeping the knee stable, their meniscus is more like a kneecap. It's actually a bone with cartilage on it. So in this study, no, we didn't see much of a difference in the meniscus. We looked at it a little bit cursorially, but nothing obvious. But we have techniques working with one of our collaborators here, Dr. Virginia Krause. We can actually collect the synovial fluid in mice, which is a tiny amount. It's 1 to 2 microliters. So, and as you can imagine, we can only measure a couple of things in it, but that's, in our next study, what we're hoping to look at is what's happening right inside the joint. Your questions are terrific about whether growth factors are elevated. If they're elevated systemically, they're likely elevated in the joint because the synovial fluid in our joints is just a filtrate of what's in our serum, in our blood. So whatever's in our blood, if it's bad, it gets to our joint. If it's good, it gets to our joint. Now, the problem with chondrocytes and the cartilage cells that we have is that we really don't have much growth or much repair capacity. So once we start this osteoarthritic degeneration, there's very little we can do to rebuild the cartilage outside of some pretty extreme experimental things that we're trying to do in the lab to completely regrow cartilage using stem cells.
People are doing experimental things on their own. I'd like to share a story with you. Actually, a story about 6 different people. We're talking with Dr. Fashad Gilak from Duke University about the effects of diet and exercise on osteoarthritis. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You make me sing.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, melanotan 2, mechanical growth factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like triptorelin or follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company. 6-Oxo is back thanks to Iron Mag Lab, the gold standard for testosterone boosting and estrogen reduction that all other over-the-counter aromatase inhibitors are compared to is 6-Oxo progesterone. 6-Oxo is the active ingredient in the new E-Control RX from Iron Mag Labs. Iron Mag Labs has resurrected the beast that has been clinically shown to raise free testosterone by as much as 226%. As men age, estrogen rises and testosterone testosterone drops. E-Control RX can help reverse this from happening. E-Control RX is suitable for post-cycle therapy to jumpstart natural testosterone production. Get E-Control RX today. Go to IronMagLabs.com today. Age Force introduces the first ever nitric oxide booster plus advanced post-workout recovery formula in a two-stage transdermal patch. Stage 1 releases its nitric oxide boosting formula directly into the bloodstream the minute you apply it, and continues to deliver a powerful nitric oxide boost during your workout. Stage 2 is delayed time release, so the post-recovery formula starts after your workout. Go to ageforce.com and check out the new pre- and post-workout patch and get 50% off any order with the promo code SHROX. Save 50% when you use coupon code SHROX.
Melatonin is the best sleep aid in the world, but it has one flaw, the delivery method. Melatonin tablets are not efficient and can wear off too soon, leaving you wide awake in the middle of the night. Time-release tablets make you feel groggy in the morning. Now there's the Age Force Sustained Delivery Melatonin Patch. This transdermal patch delivers a precise amount of melatonin from the moment you apply it and continues to do so for an entire 6 hours. This ensures a full night's sleep while waking refreshed and ready to go. Visit ageforce.com and use the coupon code SHROMEL and save 50% off your first order. Go to ageforce.com and use SHROMEL today and sleep better tomorrow.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at PrimordialPerformance.com.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest, Dr. Fashad Gilak from Duke University. We're talking about arthritis, diet, exercise, the importance of the right type of diet, the importance of exercise. Dr. Gilak, I want to share a story with you of several people who have reached out to me over the years who have suffered from arthritis. And I want to, and maybe this story will help you with future studies and looking at different things. Who knows? It's well known that competitive bodybuilders who use excessive amounts of human growth hormone, and when I say excessive, I'm talking about anywhere from 6 to 10 and even 15 IUs a day of human growth hormone. And they do this as a protocol to lean out, to help lean out, to increase muscle size, because growth hormone, unlike anabolic steroids, actually causes hyperplasia, which is new cell development, as opposed to just the plumping of existing muscle fibers. And so they use these very, very aggressive amounts. And I'm not espousing these aggressive amounts. I want to be clear about something, first of all. But when you know, it's like a bunch of guinea pigs and there's a test going on. Well, there's several side effects of using this high of dose of growth hormone. The first is quite often fluid retention. The second is an enlargement of the visceral organs and intestines, which leads to the distended stomach that you see many bodybuilders have. They look like they have a tortoise shell strapped to their front instead of a nice, flat, smooth six pack of abs. But another side effect that we can learn from is actually an overgrowth of meniscus in the joints that causes crowding, painful joints, and bulging of the joints. So there are people out there who have learned that this happens. And what they have done is they have started to use Moderate amounts of growth hormone. I'm talking about the types of doses that are espoused by those within the anti-aging medical community, like A4M, Dr. Bob Goldman's group, and those guys. Two IUs a day, 5 days a week. It's taking off on the weekends to allow the natural pulsatile nature of your own growth hormone to stay intact. And taking aggressive amounts of glucosamine and chondroitin to supply the body with the required building blocks to have an effect. And I know of six individuals who have communicated with me over the past few years who've done this. And after a year, gone back and had their particular joint. Oh, it's always the knees, to be honest with you. The people that I've talked to, the six that I've talked to, it's always their knees that they have problems with. They have gone back and they have had their osteopath look at the before and after x-rays without telling what they did, because quite a few of them probably didn't have prescriptions for the growth hormone. They have gone back and had their physician look at the before and after x-rays and go, I've never seen anything like this before. So I will stand to be corrected. I am not a doctor. I have no letters after my name, so I am eligible to stick my foot in my mouth whenever I want. No one can threaten to take my license away. But I will stand to be corrected, but I do believe that there is a method of increasing a chondrocyte production, and it requires a re-stimulation of youthful levels of growth hormone in conjunction with adequate amounts of the building blocks like glucosamine and chondroitin, and especially two specific types, D-glucuronic acid and N-acetyl D-glucosamine. These two are direct precursors to hyaluronic acid. So what would you say to that?
Well, those are very interesting studies. As far as I know, they're still somewhat anecdotal, but, you know, that's how things start, that a few people notice it, and then more people start doing it, and then we have a study that carefully tests whether it's safe and effective or not. So there's lots of good examples of that, as well as bad examples of therapies that have grown out of anecdotal evidence like this.
Yeah, and nothing happens, right?
Anyway, nothing happens, or they turn out into a real therapy, and you've got to get it available and safe to everyone to be able to use it.
Absolutely.
Now, the point you make is very interesting, that we're talking about two different but similar tissues. One is the articular cartilage, which lines the bony ends of your joints, and it is a thin layer, usually about a millimeter or two thick. And once it degenerates, there is very little you can do to get it to regenerate.
Okay.
The other is the meniscus, which is this sort of a C-shaped wedge cross-section. There's two of them in each of your knees that go around your condyles and stabilize your knee. And the meniscus is a different tissue. It's fibrocartilage, and it's cartilaginous in a sense. But the difference is that, especially on the outer sides, edges where it attaches to your joint capsule,
right,
it's vascularized. It has blood vessels. Your articular cartilage has no blood vessels, no nerve, no lymph. It's just tissue and cells. The meniscus, because of that, has access to other cells in the body and stem cells and its own ability to differentiate and proliferate a bit. And in that regard, there's a lot of evidence now that growth factors can certainly increase the proliferation of meniscus cells and potentially even improve their repair, especially in that zone where there's some blood vessels where they can draw from, you know, your dietary components as well as get growth factors and get a source of stem cells to be able to repair themselves.
Right.
So this would be very interesting. If this is, you know, really true that growth factor, human growth factor or growth hormone is causing hypertrophy and hyperplasia of the meniscus, if that's done properly and harnessed and done for the right period of time, not chronically, it could be very beneficial. Well, you could see how if you did this for too long or had, you know, like
yes,
you were saying, an uncomfortable meniscus, there's not that much room in your knee.
Right.
That if something, if a meniscus that is the right size grows, it's not going to be very comfortable.
Absolutely. That is why these individuals who have experimented with it have not used those aggressive, really almost truly
yeah,
abusive levels of growth hormone.
Right.
They've used the clinical doses that are recommended by the anti-aging community, which is just two IUs a day, which is designed to reestablish maybe a growth hormone level of you when you were in late 20s, early 30s. And
right.
And just that small change for a guy like my age, 50 years old, 53 years old, and the inclusion of certain nutraceuticals, but it took a year. It didn't. The bodybuilders who use those excessive and aggressive doses of growth hormone, they experience the bulging in the joints within a few months. But it takes a year for this type of an approach to work, because you're not using these abusive and reckless doses of growth hormone. So, but it's just interesting. It really is.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think it certainly would be something that would make a great study to follow up on and see if you could actually improve repair of the meniscus. Because right now, it especially when you're our age, like you're saying, there's not a lot of chance for it to repair if you tear it. And it starts to degenerate also, like your articular cartilage. So when you're very young, you just get an outright tear in your meniscus. It's usually a sports-type injury. When you're older, in your 40s and 50s, you get a bit of degeneration, and it starts to fray and wear.
Disintegration.
Yeah, very hard to get that to repair.
What exactly were the findings in the mice that pointed to exercise was beneficial? Even in the obese mice being fed the high fat diet, did were there changes in the actual arthritic joint that you observed, or was it just the change in the inflammatory markers that led you to believe that there was something greater going on?
No, it was an actual change in the arthritic joint. This was our most compelling finding, was that if we looked in one particular compartment of the joint, the medial compartment, which is where most of us get osteoarthritis, especially with obesity, it's the high risk factor spot. It's the inside part of your knee where the tibia and femur contact.
Okay.
If we looked in the mice, the high fat diet mice had significant arthritic changes in that compartment, and the exercise mice didn't. So it actually protected them from their joint degenerating and wearing out. In addition to these changes in the metabolic inflammation, which we looked at to try to figure out why this happened. Our primary outcome was to say, can we actually prevent the osteoarthritic changes, or is exercise potentially bad for you?
Right.
And luckily for all of us, it looks like it's going to be very helpful. And, you know, in fact, with almost all patients now, when they come to the clinic here, especially elderly patients, what our physicians try to do is to get them to move.
Yes.
The problem is they get into a cycle where it's a bit of a painful event to start exercising, even to walk or to move. But once you get past that initial pain, and it's more the fear of the pain than the pain itself.
Yes, what am
once
I doing
you get
to
past
myself?
That,
right.
What am I doing? Exactly. Yeah. This hurts, I can't do it. Once you get past that, then the pain starts to go away. And we have facilities here, for example, for very low impact water exercises for our elderly patients with osteoarthritis, up to, you know, full physical therapy type establishment to get them really exercising, doing aerobic work. I think it has to be tailored very individually to the to the patient.
And this is why you need
to go to your doctor and not just run out there and exercise.
Not only should it be tailored individually, but the optimal goal must be progressive load. If they're, you can't just give them something and say, do this, and that's all you have to do forever. They should constantly be progressing somehow, whether they are first start out in a pool of water, which is reducing some of their load-bearing pain, and then eventually moved out of the pool of water. But if they, you know, my story is not unique in that I had developed a heart problem at 39 years old, and now I was powerlifting up to 2005. I mean, my body has changed. I've changed my life because of I changed the way I eat and I changed my exercise. But I have an old saying, stronger is younger. We look at youth. We look at young people and we think of them as strong and getting stronger. And then we look at age and older people. We look at them and we think they're weak and getting weaker. And I believe that if you continually are pushing back by accomplishing more with your body, then you're pushing back time as well, because you are now regaining one of the attributes of youth, which is strength. And so they also need to be progressive in what they do, I believe, so that their progress in the joint changes and continues to get better and better. I have another question for you, and basically looking forward, this research flies in the face of what is understood by most GPs out there. General practitioners will see a patient who has arthritis in the knees, for instance, and say, well, you know, just don't do a lot of moving. We'll try to hold off a knee replacement as long as possible. How easy is it for you to disseminate this kind of information, and how well received would it be to the soldiers on the front line now?
Well, you know, programs like this are certainly very helpful for us to get the message out. And I think, you know, overall, the tide is turning a bit where there is more of an understanding of how important exercise is. Just one study after another showing that exercise, joint loading, muscle strength are all good for your body. And now, you know, more and more data showing that it's good for your joints. I think, you know, we just have to get it out there, get the message out there, slowly and through the physicians who have the direct patient contact. In certain cases, the rheumatologists are the first one to see someone who has joint pain before they even go to an orthopedic surgeon. Although our sports medicine docs see a lot of the patients who have a joint injury and they come in, and now, you know, we see even more and more athletes who are overweight and obese. So I think it'll take a little more time, but, you know, I'm hopeful. And so far, I think the physicians have been very accepting of this type of data and are very excited to have something that you can prescribe that's not Motrin and it's not a joint replacement surgery.
Yeah.
And it's healthy exercise and using your body.
Comes back to exercise all the time. And you know what? Maybe we just need to put those little wheels in people's homes.
That's right.
Get them to start waking up in the middle of the night and running. Not in the middle of the night. Don't ever challenge sleep. Listen, Dr. Gilak, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing, first of all. And please, will you please keep me apprised of some of your future research as it comes about, so we can have you back on the show to keep promoting this notion that, you know, there are things that can be done as it relates to arthritis when we're talking about diet and exercise.
Absolutely. I would love to do that. I really appreciate being on the show with you. We have a couple of studies that should be finished very soon, and one of them on a patient population, directly on patients who are obese and who have knee arthritis. And I can tell you just from the first glimpse, the data look really good and really very helpful.
Yeah,
so
got to get the word
about
out.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to get the word out about that. We have to get more people to understand and their physicians to understand. The day that insurance companies start paying for gym memberships, I will be a happy, happy human being.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, there you go.
As a gym rat myself.
There you go. Dr. Gilak, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to read an email that plays right into this discussion from a university student who is studying nutrition at university and is frustrated with the curriculum. Stay tuned. You're listening to Super Human Radio. We'll be right back.
Jordy and Rebecca, come on, get busy. Just hear that booty nonstop when the beat drop. Just keep swinging it, get jiggy. Get drunk, don't percolate anything you want. We call it oscillating if I don't take it.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbell.
If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar.
sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today.
The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels, but most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MaHLer.com.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get 2 of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Earlier in the interview with Dr. Gilak, we talked briefly about fats, and even he recognizes. First of all, he sounds like a proponent of Paleolithic style eating. That's clear. He's a gym rat. That's clear. So he probably understands a lot of the things that we understand as a community. And he is now, as a result, looking into the different types of fats in the diet and their effects on inflammation. I think that while he's looking for research, answers to research within the world of arthritis management, I think he's going to discover something else, because we realize that just about every disease out there is related to inflammation, cancer related to inflammation. You know, now we understand that type 2 diabetes has an inflammatory link. And while there is some inflammation that is important to it, we know that quite often the cells become inflamed first before they become insulin resistant. This could be a result of what Dr. Gilak spoke about earlier, about the macrophages taking up residence inside the fat cells and causing inflammation. So I suspect that his research is going to have far-reaching effects in a variety of different areas as it relates to the current state of disease. But I want to read to you an email that I got Tuesday from a fellow named Brett, and he's a university student. He said, "Carl, I want to disclose what type of information is being taught in university nutrition classes. I'm a college student, and my instructor is a registered dietitian. She talks about eating soy, avoiding unpasteurized milk and milk products, avoiding excessive tuna because of the mercury, claims that sugar causes no health problems whatsoever except the occasional dental care issues, or cavities, I'm sorry. Avoiding coconut oil and all saturated fats in general. Thinks that dietary cholesterol increases serum cholesterol. And is a proponent of a high-carbohydrate, low-fat diet. I haven't gotten to the protein lecture yet, but I'm sure she will claim that too much protein is harmful. Sir, I doubt you could endure listening to an entire lecture. It's that bad. It's an online class, so I made it a point to meet her in person at least once. And to no surprise, she was at least 50 pounds overweight
What's going on in this country? If this is what college students are being taught, what hope do we have? I understand your frustration, Brett. It's my frustration as well. The problem is that nutrition today, as it is being professed and practiced by the medical orthodoxy and the USDA and the FDA, all the other alphabet soup organizations out there, has nothing to do with enlisting the health benefits of food. It has all to do with promoting heavily government subsidized crops and our consumption of those crops to make sure that the government's investment is protected. So, if you were the government, all-powerful government, and you were going to invest billions of dollars on, well, let's say, the growth of GMO corn, you would first make sure that anyone who would be turned to have questions asked about nutrition would be on your team so that they can then promote the consumption of corn. And then you would also promote the companies that manufacture these products by allowing them to make ridiculous comments like corn cereals are heart healthy. So you see this collusion going on. We have a product to take to market. We are the government. We want to make sure that everybody eats this so we get our investment back. So we have to enlist everything downline to the end user who puts the spoon in the cereal bowl and throws it in their mouth to make sure that they know that that's the way they should eat. It has nothing to do with health anymore. It has all to do with protecting an investment, getting the dollars from your wallet into their wallet. That's all it is. So it is no surprise to me that traditional universities that have courses on nutrition are going to teach you that the food pyramid is the way to eat. The food pyramid is upside down. Animal proteins and animal fats should be at the bottom, with the caveat that these are naturally raised animals on a natural diet. And I don't mean natural the way the food industry uses the word. The food industry thinks wood is natural. Cellulose is natural. It's wood. They put it in yogurt and they say all natural. Well, it may be natural because it occurs in nature, but it is not a natural diet of humans to eat wood. It is of termites. So when I say natural diets, I mean the diets that these animals ate before animal husbandry kicked in, before we started to exploit animals. If these animals were free to roam on the ranges where they were first found, what were they eating? Were they eating corn and soy? Absolutely not. Cows were not. Cows were eating grass. In fact, they've been eating grass for so many millennia that they have two stomachs specifically to extract everything out of the grass that they can. So, it's of no surprise to me, and it's nonsense, Brett, and I understand your frustration, and I am frustrated too. But what you need to do is this. You need to challenge this teacher. You need to challenge her. Maybe not in front of the class, because you got to pass the class, right? I don't want you to abandon your credits, because it's more important for you to get your degree and get on the front lines and start talking about what you know to be true and not what you've been taught. But you should challenge this teacher. You should go to her individually. Make sure you're doing good in her class first and start to challenge her and just see how invested she is in this lie. If she's so invested in the lie of the way she's teaching nutrition that she's willing to die for it, because that's what she's doing if she's over 50 pounds overweight, she's so invested in it that she's willing to sacrifice her own life to promote the cause, because she's saying, hey, that's the way you should eat. That's the way I eat. It's healthy. Look at me. I'm obese. And I'm going to just get fatter as time goes on. I'm going to end up being on 8 or 9 different pharmaceutical drugs. I'm going to end up, my life is going to end up me sitting in a wheelchair, pooping in a diaper, facing the wall in some institution. But that's the way everyone should eat. So I'm going to do it too. If she's that emotionally invested in it, you're not going to be able to change her mind. But if she isn't, you may be able to spark some interest in her to do her own research. And that's all you can expect from her.
You're not going to gain her as an ally. She's not going to pat you on the back. But if you can just crack the cellar door open and let just a little sunlight in and blow the dust out and get her to look into it, maybe, just maybe, future classes will hear a different story from her. Maybe she'll start saying, well, while I'm supposed to tell you this, here's what I've learned. Now, I don't hope for that. I'm sorry. Because the food orthodoxy, like the medical orthodoxy, must hold tight to what they have been committing to and teaching. Because it would be an abomination for them to turn around and go, we've been wrong all this time. The reason for all the ill health in this country is because we have been promoting the wrong type of diet. Millions of people have died prematurely because of the diet we've put. The government's never going to do that. They're never going to do it. And don't expect it. You vote with your dollars. You wanted to give the government the big middle finger? Eat the foods you know to be healthy. Live the life you know to be healthy. Live to be 120, and you'll be giving the government the big middle finger. While all these other people are dying at 50, 60, and 70 of aneurysms and strokes and heart disease and complications due to diabetes or smoking cigarettes and living the life that the government wants them to live, we live the life that superhumans live. That is the way to give the government the big middle finger. So there you go. All right, we've got a great show planned for you tomorrow. Brett, thanks very much for the email. Elisa Profumo has been working feverishly on a casual Friday show for us tomorrow, and hopefully I'll have lots of opportunities to rant. We will see you tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.